Hey, folks, welcome back to the CBSSports.com College Football Podcast. I am Chip Patterson, and it's time for another Doddcast edition of the podcast. So I'd like to welcome on to the air Mr. Dennis Dodd. Dennis, are you looking at this weekend, and are you seeing anything that jumps out at you particularly this week? Because it seems kind of quiet to me, with the exception of Notre Dame, Oklahoma.
Well, no, I think Mississippi State, Alabama, Notre Dame, Oklahoma is huge for at least historical purposes. I'm really interested in how some of these races are going to shake out. Oregon is still on the books as being undefeated. Ohio State, Penn State, I think is fascinating to me. The ineligible,
that's right.
Where I just got a call from a Pennsylvania paper, and they're doing a story on, this being maybe an elimination game for National Coach of the Year. I consider Bill O'Brien. I frankly haven't considered Urban Meyer, but I guess you have to.
Well, and I guess you would have to, because Urban Meyer even admits himself. He says this, this isn't a great team, but we're playing really hard. And anytime you've got a team that's overachieving, you got to look right at the head coach and the coaching staff. What kind of do you blame Luke Fickell for the defensive issues at all? And sort of where's the jury on that Ohio State defense and how they're going to be moving forward?
Well, there is blame to be there, but they've had. And I've kind of sensed the vibe that it's going on Luke Fickell, which it usually does in these types of situations. The coordinator gets blamed, but they've had tremendous injury issues, especially at linebacker, which if you think about Ohio State football, that's kind of where it all emanates from. And they've won close games, they've won shootouts, they've won thrillers, they got lucky, I guess you could say, against Purdue. They've just kind of For a football factory that's had its share of problems, I would say right now Ohio State under Urban Meyer is fairly embraceable. That's the best way I can put it for them. Am I wrong? I don't know. Who knows?
What's your pick in that ineligible? I haven't looked at the picks yet today.
I was shocked to see that Penn State is favored by 2.5, it's hard because Braxton Miller is going to play. He's coming back. He had that sore neck, but our lasting memory of him is being carted off the field, wondering if he'd ever play football again. And he's a guy that tends to throw his body around and take hits. And
he's the one-man offense.
He's a one-man offense. And if he doesn't play like that, Ohio State doesn't win. So I guess I'll give a slight nod to Ohio State, although I'm being hypocritical. I did pick Penn State in my in our official picks, but that was a day ago. Yeah. I guess I can change.
No. It's set in stone. I think I picked opposite you on that one, and I need to catch up. But one idea I wanted to look at this week, and I sent Dennis an email. I hope that this isn't too wild, but I was thinking about just the end of the year and the list of contenders, because there are probably, if we get down to one loss teams, about six or seven teams that legitimately have a pretty good shot at the title. And so I wanted to sort of look down the stretch and see where are these teams that could potentially, have the trap games. It's the BCS chaos theory. And so games that have a threat to causing all kinds of mayhem in the BCS.
Yeah, I was kind of piddling around this week, and I came up with about 12 teams that realistically have a chance. And at the end of it, I was reminded that, oh, by the way, Mississippi State's undefeated too. And they've got the schedule. And a championship game and the possibility to get up in there too. I mean, they're almost on a plane with, if you think about it, Kansas State. But, oh no, there's no way. Wait a minute, they won. Oh, okay. Then you have to start considering them. So, yeah, I came up with about a dozen, and they're all included in these games we're going to talk about. So away we go.
So we're going to start, obviously, with Mississippi State and Alabama. Are you giving the Bulldogs a chance? Because I look at this, and like you said with Kansas State probably is taken a lot more seriously after seeing what they were able to do on the road at Morgantown, just with not only winning, but absolutely dominating, getting to pick their own score on offense and holding West Virginia's defense to really just one touchdown in serious time. Are you giving Mississippi State a chance in Tuscaloosa?
No. I kind of had a chance to cover this game, and I just said, this has got all the earmarks of a 38-17 game, because Mississippi State, I think, has kind of done little, they had the opportunity to show that they could be a really undefeated, really, really good team, because Jackson State, a bad Auburn at Troy, where they kind of struggled, but, you know, that happens. South Alabama, Kentucky, Mississippi, and Middle Tennessee. It's the schedule hasn't been there, and it's extremely backloaded for Mississippi State, and they kick it off at the number one team in the country at home. And I think what sways me is that Alabama has, you know, been in a lot of these blowouts where Nick has taken his foot off the pedal and played everybody. I think he'll have no excuse in this. I mean, it's a conference game. It's two undefeated teams, and if he gets a chance to bring the wood, he will. That's why I kind of think they're going to cover the number, and it's going to be something like, 31-7 or 38-17. Tyler Russell's a fine player, but let's see him against that defense.
Yeah, it's been – what I think – correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't the Auburn – the 2010 Auburn-Alabama game, the last time that Alabama has given up more than 14 or 17 points?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, they haven't given up more than, obviously, 21 this year. And that sounds about right. And it's a legitimate defense. We don't have to get into that, but yeah, we know they're good.
All right, so Florida and Georgia, because this is really one of those first games that could cause a lot of chaos, because if Georgia is able to beat Florida down in the cocktail party, mm-hmm, that turns the SEC East into a little bit of a mess. And I think one of the themes that we'll have here going down the stretch is that the SEC championship game, those division races, however they play out, could end up setting the tone for the rest of the BCS.
Yeah, and it has the last 6 years. I mean, whoever wins the league has been in the championship game, and now I think even the voters and the computers are conditioned to that if there's any question at the end. So you're right about Florida Georgia. It's a really good matchup for Georgia, because what they don't do well, which is defense, they have a lot of problems this year. Matches up with Florida's offense, which had 29 yards and 21 points at halftime against South Carolina. And I think Georgia has the offense to move the ball against Florida. I think Florida's defense will be challenged by Aaron Murray and those running backs and those receivers. So, I don't think it's that runaway that people expect, because Florida's really good now and have won 15 of the last 18 or whatever it is in the cocktail party. Florida is not a fully formed team. If you take the field, counting on your defense and your special teams to win every week, that's a dicey proposition. Now they're very good at defense. Defense doesn't slump usually,
right?
But to expect three fumbles on special teams, or two of them, I think, are on special teams, that's a reach. And they were so far ahead at halftime against South Carolina, 21-6. It might have been 40-6. That they literally worked on the offense in the second half. I was at the game. There was no chance that South Carolina was going to get to 21 points that day. They were terrible. So they worked on the offense and got a little bit better. Still got outgained in the game. They won by 33 points. So I think it's incumbent on Florida's offense to show something, because you can't assume that it's going to get a short field two or three guys every game if Georgia takes care of the ball.
Right, and if Marshall and Gurley are able, I mean, there are the offensive weapons for Georgia to score 20 points. And if this, as good as Florida is, like you said, they may face a situation where they're going to need to score 24 points to win this game.
Yeah, and I think that's a good number. I mean, I always backload these games. Okay, what is the number you're going to have to get to win? And 20 or 24, I think, is about right. And you know, can Florida get there? I think Georgia can get there. But, you know, I think Florida, if they get there, is going to need some turnovers.
Yeah.
So I think this game's a lot closer than people think. And sure, look, Georgia, having lost to South Carolina, almost goes in with playing with house money. Now, if they win, the East, the SEC East, is back in play. But I don't think there's that pressure on them where they have to win, although, you know, I say that, and 15 out of the last 18 is enough pressure as it is.
All right, let's. We're going to take a pause from the SEC and the chaos theory because obviously, like we said, they are where everything will come from at the end. But over in the Big 12, we've got no championship game, and in reality, probably Kansas State and Oklahoma as your only two potential BCS title game contenders. Would you agree?
Yeah, and they'll probably get two out of the. Into the BCS. The Big Ten is not going to get to. The Pac-12 has a chance to get to, obviously. But, yeah, I mean, I think you can almost deliver that right now. You know, even if Oklahoma loses to Notre Dame, that they're probably going to finish 10-2 and be in a BCS bowl.
You think that there's any chance? Kansas State, they got host Texas Tech this week. They host Oklahoma State next week. Then they have to go at TCU and then at Baylor. And then, Oklahoma plays at TCU. So TCU has a real chance to play spoiler to both Kansas State and Oklahoma, two teams that, depending on what happens in the SEC, depending on what happens with Oregon and Oregon State, I mean, they're sitting here basically with no margin for error. And if they want to be in the national championship game, which Jerry Palm has the Wildcats in there right now, you know, where do you see those potential slip-ups along the way, and do you think that there's a chance that either one of those teams are able to run the table from here on out?
I think Kansas State this week against Texas Tech at home is going to be tough because we've already seen Texas Tech beat West Virginia and take their knees out from them, you know, take them off of the knees. Now, Kansas State did that too, so West Virginia's a bit of a fraud. But don't sleep on Tommy Tuberville in a big game with a defensive game plan, and I think he'll have one for these guys. Also, the game, like you mentioned, at TCU, even though TCU gave up 56 at home and a triple overtime loss to Texas Tech last week, I still think they have some really good quality defensive players. And at home, you're having to deal down the stretch with Tommy Tuberville, Gary Patterson. It's really nothing to lose. Texas Tech isn't expected to win this game. TCU's out of the race. So I think they'll bring the house. I think they're going to have something for K-State. I think K-State's really, really good. I think Bill Snyder knows that, too. He knows these guys.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Oklahoma. Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if they get out of the Notre Dame game. I can see a scenario where Notre Dame wins that game, that they control tempo, like they've uglied up every game they've played, where they control tempo and hold the ball and keep it away from Landry Jones and those receivers and get a turnover or two. I mean, it happened against Kansas State. So I can see a situation where they get that. And then with everything on the line at TCU in the final game of the season, TCU's got a very good history against Oklahoma since about 2005 or 6 when Rhett Bomar was kicked out of school. That first game, season opener, TCU at Oklahoma, TCU won, you know, and has done it since then.
That TCU team is also very young, and it seems to me like they are getting better. And that's not, you know, not just Boykin at quarterback, but it's just there are a lot of places on the field where you saw inexperience at the beginning of the season. And I think that would be that's a nightmare for the Sooners to have to face them, like you said, with potentially everything on the line.
With Oklahoma State the week before, it's Bedlam and then TCU. And I always write the story around November 1st, when this is the time when weird things start to happen because teams are beaten up. They're not as good as they were. Players are out. There are injuries you don't know about. And this is when you see most of the upsets is in November when things like that happen where teams just can't keep up because it's been a long, hard slog. And a team like Texas A&M has to go 12 straight weeks. So I you know, that's my over under on upsets. I think after November 1st.
What now? Let's say Notre Dame they are able to shock the Sooners in Norman. Then, really, their most challenging game is the last game of the season at USC. But I would also say, you know, Boston College, they get the Spaz is on the hot seat. They may be a lame duck team, but, you know, you've got that game, Wake Forest, Pittsburgh, and USC. If the Irish can get it done against Oklahoma, is it possible that they ugly up their way to an undefeated season?
Could they be undefeated? I think even then it's going to be hard because they probably would probably have the worst resume of any undefeated team right now. And I know this is one of their all-time schedules, but it hasn't worked out that way because Michigan State haven't been good. Purdue hasn't been good. Maybe drag them down. In fact, I was just figuring this. They have, going forward, their last, five games, the average rank of their opponent in Jerry Palm's rankings is 60. And their opponents of those teams is about 45. So that would put them towards kind of the bottom of any undefeated. But again, if there's only two, this argument stops when there's only two undefeated teams. They get in. Notre Dame gets in. Notre Dame will get some juice for being Notre Dame. And if you beat USC at the end, that's significant too. So, you know, with all that on the line. So, they've got a chance, but I think their chance is they've got to be one of two undefeated teams. I don't think there's a one-loss team. There's a bunch of one-loss teams. They get in there.
What do you think? Where are you standing on LSU down the stretch? Because obviously, if they're not able to beat Alabama in Tiger Stadium, which is a huge task as it is, they still have some other challenges down the stretch that are not. I mean, LSU at Arkansas, who knows, especially with the way that series has gone sometimes. You've got who else do they have to play? They have to play
Alabama, Mississippi State, Ole Miss, and then Arkansas, yeah.
You know, they would have to, with one loss already, they'd have to beat Alabama and win out in order to win the West. Mm-hmm. And if they win the West, is the only way for LSU right here, win the West, win the SEC championship game, and then
they've already got a loss, so they I don't think this is 2007 when they got there with two losses. Nobody else was there to challenge them. There's too many good teams, I think, right now. So no, I think I think they have to win out. I think that's clearly the only way they get there.
How much longer do you think the Beaver juice can stay rolling for Oregon State?
They're kind of the West Coast version of Notre Dame. I think we can all agree to that.
Yeah.
I think they've got to go to, is it this week? They go to Washington, Arizona, at Stanford, Cal, and Oregon. They get Oregon at home. It looks to me like they could lose any of those games, or they could win them all. That's how they are. I mean, they lose their starting quarterback, Mannion. Cody Bass comes in. Their receivers and running backs are pretty good, but their defense, I heard Mike Riley on a show yesterday, somebody asked him, did you expect this? And he said, no. I didn't think we'd be this good. He goes, I knew we had some good players, but you know, they're number 14 in Palm's rankings right now. They're right there. I mean, if they went out, then they will have beaten a pretty good Arizona State team, a top 25 Stanford team, and then knocked off the defending champ Oregon. They'll get a lot of juice out of that going in. So, I mean, that's kind of the tone of what I'm going to write this week. If you want a shot, hope you're undefeated and there's only one other undefeated team, because anything else is chaos.
Yeah, no, I think we might have chaos, and I think that I look at Oregon State, USC, and Oregon, you know, let's say they go to the Coliseum, they beat the Trojans. They've got to turn right around and play Cal. And Cal is not a fantastic team, but if you want to talk about if they put it all out there against USC, and, you know, that is a tough game to go on the road and play Cal in Berkeley right after that. And then you play Stanford, one of the most physical teams. And then the week after Stanford, you've got to go to Corvallis to play Oregon State.
Yeah, they will have earned it by the time they get there. And, you know, I've already said this. I think this is the best Oregon team that's ever they've ever had. But, you know, that history basically goes back to 1994 with Rich Brooks. So it's not like a rich and glorious history. But we all know the team speed. You know, I think the matchup in 2 weeks against USC is bad because I've seen this game 2 years ago. I think USC trailed or led 32-29 at half, and Oregon came out in the second half, scored three bang, bang, bang touchdowns, and it was over. And I think that's the kind of team we're looking at this year. I don't think USC can win a shootout because their offensive players aren't as good as Oregon's offensive players, and Oregon's defense is underrated. So, yeah, I mean, if they get that far again, just like Oregon State, they will have earned it. You know, there a lot of people are projecting Oregon to be in that championship game.
Do you think that they make it to that championship game as a one-loss team? Just if it by some chance, let's say they lose to USC, but then beat Oregon State to win the division, beat USC in the Pac-12 championship mm-hmm. game, is that going to be enough to get them in? Or is that the kind of scenario that opens the door for a one-loss Kansas State or a one-loss Oklahoma?
Well, I think in that scenario, it kind of depends on when you lose, because right now there's not much difference between Kansas State and Oregon in terms of strength. Now, they're opponents' opponents, which is part of the BCS. Oregon's, I have them second among the 12 teams that I consider competitors. Kansas State is not very far behind at fourth. Now, all these numbers change throughout the season, but I think it's going to be a razor's edge. You know, Kansas State's opponents, in other words, their strength of schedule remaining is surprisingly good with Texas Tech, Oklahoma State, TCU, Baylor, and Texas. The only, you know, bum in there is Baylor, but Baylor's strength of schedule, again, opponents is 14, top 15. So that's going to help. That's going to help Kansas State.
Yeah, the Baylor is, you know, we'll say the eighth best team maybe in the mm-hmm. Big 12, and even then we've seen them, you know, hang right with lots of teams because of their ability to score points. Now their defense might be 11 tackling sleds on the field, but you know they can at least hang with anybody.
Yeah, I think, you know, look, if Kansas State loses this week against Texas Tech, they're probably done. They don't have a championship game to make up for it. If Oregon loses to, to USC, and then probably they lose the home field advantage for the championship game, by the way, and then went out, Oregon State's got a heck of a chance to be in there as a one-loss team. I don't think so much Kansas State because you know, USC is ranked higher. I think USC is a central figure in this because a lot of teams have to hope USC does really well, Oregon among them, but, you know, they have to hope they beat them twice and then USC wins the rest of their game. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, no, you end up rooting for people that you have to play, then hoping you beat them, and then hoping they win after. It's a very odd situation. All right, we got one.
How damaged does USC look after Oregon beats them twice and Oregon's in competition with these other teams? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
There's another interesting scenario that could cause a lot of chaos, in my opinion, and that is what happens if Louisville and Rutgers are both undefeated when they play each other and it's the same weekend as all the rest of the conference championships. I think they play on a Friday night of that weekend.
Yeah.
And the winner's the Big East champion, but what if that is an undefeated Louisville or Rutgers? They're both in the top 20 of the BCS standings now. Presumably you only rise if they keep winning.
Yeah.
What kind of chaos or doomsday scenario would it take for an undefeated Louisville or an undefeated Rutgers to make it not just, you know, to the Orange Bowl, but into the BCS title game playing a week later?
I think either one would... Whoever's undefeated out of that would be significantly in danger of being jumped by a one-loss SEC team or a one-loss Oregon that wins its championship. you know, again, those two, I think the schools that play championship games are going to be an inherent advantage in a scenario like that, because they'll just have more juice, you know, more fuel for the fire.
I think
Rutgers, if it was the only undefeated team, or Louisville, would probably be in danger of that. Now, for top two, yeah, I think they'd be in danger of that for top two.
Do you think that the point you just made about not having a championship game, mm-hmm. and that being a little bit of a disadvantage, if that happens this year in the Big 12, does that give Bowlesby a little bit of incentive to maybe work towards that championship game?
Yeah, I mean, I've said that. I think, you know, that if it happens for a period of years, you know, it happened last year with Oklahoma State. It happened again, but again, you know, they're making money hand over fist. Where do you find two teams, A, that are willing to come, you know, because everybody's locked up now, basically. There's a $50 million, you know, buyout in the ACC. I guess you could go get the Big East, but none of those teams are going to bring pro rata. In other words, nothing close to what they're going to be getting from their rights. You know, you're going to have to bring someone who's significantly worth more than their current rights fee, and there's no one else out there. The only team that is off the board. Notre Dame's at the ACC, so I think it makes it less likely. I think it would be a period of years of this happening before the Big 12 considered expansion. I don't think this alone does it.
Right, that's something that is missed so often, and you know, that's just sort of the nature of fandom right now. Mm-hmm. But if you invite somebody else, that's another mouth to feed. It means you're mm-hmm. means you have to cut off some of your slice of the pie. And so for this, you know, 10-team harmonious Big 12 family, you're going mm-hmm. to have to show them hard numbers that whether it's, you know, a Louisville, Florida State, Clemson, anybody else that has fans that seem to be thinking they could jump at any moment, you know, you need to bring the actual dollar value to prove that it's worth them getting a smaller piece to break you off some.
Yeah, and they don't have it. I mean, I always say you're in this scenario, in this conference realignment merry-go-round, you're either a brand or you're a market, and Louisville is neither. You know, Cincinnati is neither. That's been mentioned. You know, FSU is a brand. Clemson is a brand. But again, those two schools are locked in by a $50 million rights fee. You know, I think the only way that this could happen is probably if the Big East somehow fell apart. I don't think that's going to happen. They're going to exist in some form with, you know, probably not the rights fees they want in terms of media dollars, but it will keep going on. So yeah, there's no momentum toward that right now, I guess.
All right, we'll get you out of here on this one. What is – I know we talked about a lot of the teams right there at the top. This was a BCS chaos theory idea of the Dodcast. What are some of the – below the headlines, a team that has either been making a push or surprised you, or an interesting story that you've noticed in recent weeks and are looking forward to following down the stretch?
That is at the top or just
– But below the headlines.
Below the headlines, below the Mendoza line.
Right.
I love the Mac story, and you know, I want to get into that because they have four schools now with one loss or less, including Ohio. They have 14 wins in the non-con against FBS schools, which is pretty good for them. I was outraged when Tyler Pendleton wasn't one of the semifinalists for the Davey O'Brien Award. 8 weeks into the season, he's eliminated. That's great. Great thought there.
Yeah,
but there's a lot of good coaches and a lot of good players, and you see this, the MAC kind of rise up every few years, and then go back down. Well, this is one of those years, and I think the story at Ohio is great with Frank Solich. Northern Illinois is good. Toledo, obviously beating Cincinnati, and you know it's to be reckoned with. They have a pretty good non-conference record, and I want to see how they do down the stretch. Ohio, a long shot for that BCS bowl. It looks like for the second straight year, we're not going to have that non-BCS school. But if it's going to be a team, it's going to be Ohio. Unfortunately, their schedule really, you know, goes down the tubes. They face the problem Boise used to have, you know, who have you played?
Right.
And, you know, they're just at the very edge of the top 25 now, and it's not going to get any better. it's just not. So it's going to be a real long shot for them to get in, but it'd be kind of cool if that happened.
Yeah, I think, and the MAC is second only to the SEC in the number of bowl eligible teams at this mm-hmm. point in the season. Northern Illinois, Toledo. I'm wondering if Ohio's biggest biggest hurdle in, you know, an undefeated season and a possible BCS bowl game might even be the MAC championship game. I mean, I think yeah. all of that conference play down the stretch is going to make for a lot of really fun football to watch.
Yeah, and Frank Solis has been, I think, 8 years now and still hasn't won that. I think it's the one hurdle he's had. Gotten to it, but hasn't won. It would be kind of nice if he did.
Absolutely. All right, well, he is Dennis Dodd. Make sure you follow him on Twitter, at DennisDoddCBS. Make sure you go to iTunes and subscribe so you can get the Doddcast every single week. We'll deliver it to you free of charge to your iTunes account. Be sure you tune in the rest of the week. We got the Weekend Picks panel coming tomorrow with Jerry Hennen and Tom Fornelli defending their CBSSports.com expert picks as we all try and chase the pickmaster, Dennis Dodd, who still has a commanding lead against the spread.
I will be on my 800 line selling my service.
You should. It should Jim Wins or whatever the Dodds Locks. How about that? Dodds, the 1-800 Dodds Locks.
Dodds Lock. I need to do that.
Anyway, keep a lookout for Dodds Locks. We'll have a hotline coming soon. And thanks so much for tuning in to another Doddcast.